Before we begin today, a brief warning. Contents may be disturbing and language may be explicit and inappropriate for young listeners, so listener discretion is advised. Hey guys, welcome to Murderers and Monsters. This is Marie.
What's up? It's Shelby.
All right, guys. So we have had some suggestions saying that they like it for us to just do our chit chat and stuff like that at the end. So we're going to go ahead and just jump into the case this week. And if y'all want to hear us banter back and forth and talk about our crazy stuff, then y'all just stick with us at the end. All right. This week is my turn. So I have picked a case that was also one that was really interesting to me whenever I first got into the true crime genre podcast kind of situation. The guy that I'm going to talk about today has actually been the inspiration for several horror movies. And I think whenever I name these off that we'll all, you know, we'll all be able to relate
piece
with
together.
Yeah. Be able to relate to, like, either we've seen them all, we've seen one or two of them or something. Anyway, so he was actually the main inspiration for the movie Psycho with Norman Bates. He was the inspiration for the Texas Chainsaw Massacres with Leatherface. And then the most recent, Silence of the Lambs, with the character was Buffalo Bill. So the guy that we're going to talk about today is Ed Gein. His name was Ed Theodore Gein, and he was also known as the Butcher of Plainfield or the Plainfield Gould. He was an American murderer and a body snatcher. So that's something that we haven't talked about before.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Right? So Ed was born Edward Theodore Gein in La Crosse, Wisconsin on August the 27th of 1906. So this is kind of an older case. He was the second of two boys of George and Augusta Gein. His mama, she was religious. I mean, they were like nominally Lutheran, and I'm not real familiar with that section of religion, but
I'm not either.
I don't know a whole lot about it either.
I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about this case in general other than what I've seen in the horror movies. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I know some, but not a lot. So I'm very intrigued.
Okay, cool. So she was really, really super religious, and she preached to her sons. George had an older brother, and she preached to them like all the time. She would set aside time every day to talk to them about just the promiscuous instruments of the devil and about how innate immorally that people were as part of the world. She talked about the evils of drinking and her belief that all women, except for herself, were promiscuous and instruments of the devil.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, not her, so mind you.
I was going to say, so how did that not include herself?
Right,
if that's how she viewed women in general.
Exactly. So, yeah,
and
that's
she
a
had
little
kids,
bit.
So. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you had to do something to get them.
Yeah, right.
Right.
I don't know.
So she reserved time for them every afternoon, and she read to them from the Bible concerning death, murder, and divine retribution. She also, to be such a religious lady, hated her husband. Yeah, she couldn't stand him. She said he was an alcoholic who was unable to keep a job. He had worked at various different jobs as a carpenter, a tanner, and an insurance salesman, but he just couldn't keep like regular income, you know? So
yeah.
It was pretty much always up to her to figure something out. They said in a couple of articles that I read in a podcast that I was listening to, they said that she actually owned a grocery store that was doing pretty good in the little bitty town they lived in. The town that they lived in, to start with, it was no metropolis by any means. You know, it wasn't some big bustling town. But so she owned a little grocery store or whatever, and she was the one that pretty much like kept everything going. So whenever she realized that her boys were getting on up a little bit, at this time, Ed was about right around 8 years old. She decided that she was really worried about the outside influence on her kids. So,
mm.
yeah. So what she decided, because they were going to school, stuff like that.
Right.
They had people that were, you know, influencing them in ways that she couldn't control. So
right.
she decided what they were going to do was they were going to pick up and they were going to move to this little bitty town called Plainfield.
Mm.
So this town at that time had a... At this time right now, not just at that time, has always had a really, really small population. I believe that it's always been less than 800 or 700, somewhere around there. I mean, it varies.
Wow.
Tiny. With people passing away and children getting born, it fluctuates. But right around 700 or 800 is what this little bitty town is. They actually referred to it as a village in some of the articles that I read. You know what I mean? So, and she bought a 155-acre farm, and she moved her children out there, and her husband, of course. and this became, like, their main residence. She took advantage of the farm's isolation by turning away outsiders who could have actually influenced her sons. That's the main reason she moved there. She wanted to keep them isolated. Other than going to school, they were supposed to go straight to school, come straight home. If they ever tried to have, like, any friends over or go to any friend's house, that was absolutely forbidden. And for a lot of the times when the boys would actually ask to have friends over or to go to friends' houses, she would find a way to punish them just for asking.
That sounds really toxic.
It does, doesn't it? This is
very,
just
very toxic. And not only just that, but I mean, how old was he at this point? Or how old were
he
all
was
the kids?
Eight. He was eight. There was just two.
So I mean, imagine, you know, you're still in that period of where you're growing and your mind is developing. So, you know, you're trying to develop these social cues and everything else. And that's going to be very confusing, especially as you grow older.
Right.
And you're growing up in toxicity right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, this is, and this was like back in the 30s, 1930s-ish, somewhere around in there. So Ed left the farm only to attend school outside of school. He spent most of his time just like doing chores on the farm. He was very shy, and his classmates and his teachers remembered him having a strange, having strange mannerisms, such as, I mean, he would just like start laughing to himself. Like nobody was talking to him. He wasn't talking to anybody. He would just start laughing. I mean, it was like he was laughing at his own personal jokes or something like that, which they found.
Oh, no, I can't say anything. I do the same thing.
Girl,
I sit here.
if that's any kind of indication, we all fucked.
I was about to say, listen, because what was it? I think we were talking like a week ago or so. And like, I just randomly started laughing because I thought of something in my head. So I can't really attest to that.
Yeah. Excuse me. So, all right. So, I mean, and to make matters worse, if you've seen any pictures, have you looked up any pictures of this man?
Yes.
A few, yeah.
Actually, I found some that were like actual pictures of everything. If you just like Google it, I noticed that there were just like severely edited.
They are. They're very few. You have to really like dive off the deep end to get some of the more graphic pictures. But just as a picture of him, himself, his face, he had what some people refer to as a lazy eye. But what it actually was he had like a small tumor growing over one of his eyes, which made his eye look like a lazy eye. Was basically what it was. So, and you know how awful and mean kids are. So naturally they made fun of him for that and for the, you know, his, just him not being like everybody else. So he was made fun of. But surprisingly, he did really well in school. Well, fairly well, but he loved reading. Like it was a solitary activity. He could sit down and he could lose himself in whatever book or magazine he was reading at the time, but that was one thing that he did really, really well. So on April the 1st of 1940, Ed's father George died of heart failure caused by his alcoholism, and he was like 66 at that time. Ed and his brother Henry, they began doing odd jobs around town just to help cover the living expenses out there on the farm and stuff like that. And they were generally considered reliable, honest, by all the residents that they came in contact with, the people that knew them in the town and stuff like that. They were, I mean, nobody ever thought anything bad about them, you know. They were, to be honest, So Ed got along really well with children, right? Because if you believe some of the articles, some of the things that you can read about him, he kind of was a little bit stunted. I mean, it's like you're saying he doesn't know social cues, he doesn't know how to interact with like more adult people, things like that. So he got along really well with children. So a lot of the people in the community actually paid him to babysit. Yeah. Wouldn't that be a story after all is said and done about this case right here? And you could say that at some point one day, Ed was your babysitter. Y'all just put that in your back pocket and you'll find out why that's so unbelievable if you're not familiar with this case.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm gonna have to pass.
Right? And I mean, the people there never even thought twice about it because he was just Ed. You know what I mean? So, he enjoyed the babysitting. I mean, like I said, he seemed to relate a lot better to the kids. Henry, his brother, actually began dating a divorced woman of two and had planned to move in with her. He worried a lot about Ed's attachment to their mother because although she was as toxic as she was, Ed was like she was he was in her spell. I mean, there was his mother could do no wrong. He was her boy. You know what I mean? And Henry actually had said a few things to Ed about, I don't think this is a good idea. I think you need to branch out more. I mean, as they got older,
To kind of separate their
right, because he
very
was,
close relationship.
yeah. And I mean, he was right. I mean, he did need to branch out more, but Ed wasn't having it. Ed was not having it. And he was actually pretty upset with his brother for even mentioning it because every now and then, Henry would say something kind of mean, kind of ugly about their mom, and it would piss Ed off. He would just get real upset about it because he was so attached to his mama.
So
So.
before we got on here and that list I sent you that I thought was kind of interesting, I just kind of, grazed through it or whatever. It said when Ed was like 12, around that age or so, that he was in the bathtub and he was masturbating, and she actually come in there and found him, and she grabbed his genitals and was like, "This is the curse of the man." And when I read that, I was just like, this is sick. I mean, I know, like, I could imagine walking in on the kid, your kid or whatever, taking care of his issues, but in lighter terms, but because I mean, they're young at that age. I mean,
They're just trying things out, yeah.
right. But I mean, I couldn't imagine just grabbing a hold of it and being like, that's just,
Nope.
I don't know. That was just kind of like a major insane red flag that went up for me.
Right. I mean, that just gives you an indication of the kind of person that she was. She had zero boundaries. She was going to be in charge of whatever, whenever. And yeah. So, with that being said, on May the 16th of 1944, Ed and his brother Henry, they were burning away some marsh vegetation on the edge of the property. And apparently the fire got out of control. It drew the attention of the local fire department, and by the end of the day, the fire, excuse me, having been extinguished and the firefighters gone, Ed reported his brother missing. He said that he couldn't find Henry anywhere. Now, that seems odd to me, just for the simple fact of if you had a bunch of firemen there already, wouldn't you like want to know where your brother was during the meantime? Like, you wouldn't be already looking for him? But yeah.
But did they have like a kind of close relationship, or did they kind of not see eye to eye, or
Well, they did have a real close relationship because they were brought up by the same psychotic woman. But
unfair?
I mean, because Henry was a little bit older than Ed, I think he was 2 or 3 years older than Ed, he had already tried to branch out, like I had
To
said
get away
before.
from the mom.
He had actually started a relationship with that woman who was divorced and things like that.
So is it
So,
possible that whenever that happened or and occurred, that maybe, I don't know,
I'm about to get
maybe
to
he,
it.
oh, okay, my bad. I'm jumping ahead.
No, it's okay. It's fine. So with lanterns and flashlights, a search party searched for the 43-year-old Henry, whose dead body was fi found lying face down. Apparently, he had been dead for some time. and
Oh,
appeared and it and it appeared that the cause of death was heart failure, since he had not been burned or injured otherwise.
interesting.
It was later reported by a biographer that Henry had bruises on his head, and that the police dismissed the possibility of foul play, and the county coroner later officially listed asphyxiation as the cause of death. I guess because he thought that he had breathed in the smoke, even though there
And
was
that's
no
what caused
burn.
heart failure?
Yeah. A little bit of,
That's
there's a
that
whole lot
smells
of,
fishy.
yeah, that, there's a whole lot of, I don't know what the hell y'all are talking about right there, but
That
okay,
smells
we'll,
fishy.
So after Henry's suspicious death, Ed and his mother, they were now alone. His dad was dead. His brother was dead. It was just him and Augusta. But Augusta had actually been so upset by the loss of Henry that it wasn't very long after that she had a paralyzing stroke. Now, when that, yeah, I mean, she was
Wow.
extremely upset. Yeah. Now, after that happened, Ed, of course, was 100% mama's boy. He was taking care of her. He was there for everything she needed, to the point where some of the information that I read said that there were times when he would crawl into the bed with her and stroke her back to make her feel better.
This sounds more like a romantic
It
based
sounds,
relationship more than just son and mom.
Right.
You know, because don't get me wrong, like I'm close with my mom and everything, and I would, you know, do everything that I could if she was ill in any type of way, but I don't
Sure.
know that I would do, there's a line I wouldn't cross, you know?
Right.
Just sounds a little bit more romantic based.
I know. It's like some kind of sick attachment that is just, yeah. So even though Ed took care of her and did everything he possibly could, Augusta ended up having a second stroke soon after, and her health deteriorated rapidly. She died on December the 29th of 1945 at the age of 67, and Ed was devastated by her death. They said that at some of the information that I read said that when he was at, excuse me, the funeral, it was like a small child was there. I mean, he was like quailing with grief. Like, it was like
heart-wrenching. His heart
was
broken
He was
completely.
devastated. Yes. I mean, and he was, and now he was absolutely alone. Like, he had nobody. So he ended up holding on to the farm, and he earned money from odd jobs and stuff like that. But he boarded up the rooms that had actually been used by his mom, like the upstairs, the downstairs parlor, and the living room. He boarded
That's
those
not
rooms
healthy.
up. He boarded those rooms up just like they were when she passed away. And he never, he left them untouched. He never messed with them again. Like, it was a shrine to his mom. So while the rest of the house became increasingly squalid, these rooms remained pristine. He ended up living in a small room next to the kitchen after that. And around this time, he became interested in reading magazines and adventure stories, particularly those involving cannibals or Nazi atrocities, specifically from, and I'm going to mess this name up, so y'all forgive me, Isla Kosch. She was actually a German that was part of all the bad things that went on with the Nazis. And she was the person that selected the tattooed prisoners for death in order to fashion lampshades and other items from their skin. He started reading all kinds of stuff about that. So, on the morning of November the 16th of 1957, a 58-year-old woman, she was a Plainfield hardware store owner. Her name was Bernice Warden. She disappeared. A Plainfield resident reported that the hardware store's truck had been driven out from the rear of the building around 9:30 a.m. The hardware store saw few customers the entire day. Some of the residents believed that this was because of deer hunting season, because with them being in such a small community and living where they do, because Wisconsin, you know, they have so much snow, things like that. And it being the era that it was, they did a lot of hunting. And mm-hmm. that was their main source of food, was sure. deer hunting and stuff like that. So the majority of men were gone that day. They were out hunting. They were doing their thing. Everybody knew that this was a thing that they did every year. So Bernice's son, his name was Frank. He was actually a deputy sheriff, and he really didn't care much for Ed, because the stories that I read said that Ed had actually been coming in there and kind of sort of hitting on her a little bit, as in flirting or trying to flirt, whatever his version of that would be.
Right.
And even asked her out and stuff like that. But she always turned him down. She was always nice to him, but she always turned him down. And her son, he knew about it because they had talked about it. So when he got back from hunting, he went into the store. It was about 5 p.m. that afternoon, and he found the store's cash register open and bloodstains on the floor. He told investigators that on the evening before his mother's disappearance, that Ed had come into the store and that he was supposed to have returned the next morning for a gallon of antifreeze. And a sales slip for a gallon of antifreeze was the last receipt that was written by Bernice that morning, the same day that she actually disappeared. So on the evening of the same day, Ed was arrested at a West Plainfield grocery store. Now, I heard it was a grocery store. I heard he was at a friend's house and they came there and picked him up. We're just going to go with grocery store. So now the sheriff's department is going out to his home. And I'm going to do just a little bit more of a trigger warning. The things that we're about to discuss are extremely detailed.
Disturbing.
And disturbing. Yes. So just giving y'all a heads up, if you need to skip ahead, that's fine. But what we're fixing to talk about is, it's going to be pretty rough. So one of the county's deputies, they discovered her decapitated body in a shed on Ed's property. She was hung upside down by her legs with a crossbar at her ankles and ropes at her wrists. The torso was dressed out like a deer. And she had been shot with a .22 caliber rifle, and the mutilations were made after death. So, yeah, that was what they walked into. Now, mind you, the
could you just imagine?
No, ma'am, I could not.
Just walking in and seeing something so graphic, like
Yeah, and what makes that worse is the farm, they were like, this was late in the evening, right? The farm had no electricity and no running water. So they're in there with flashlights, and one of the sheriffs actually bumped into something, turned around and looked at it, and that's what it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
Seeing that spread eagle like that, you know, I mean, that's just crazy.
And it was said that she was split from her pubic bone all the way down through her breastplate. And then her head was missing, and he had completely gutted her as though he was gutting a deer. Mm-hmm. So after that happens, those sheriffs run out of the house. They coordinate with some more people. They go back in and search in the house. This is a list of what the authorities found. We ready? Whole human bones and fragments. A wastebasket made of human skin covering several chair seats, skulls on his bedposts, female skulls, some with the tops sewn off, bowls made from human skulls, a corset made from a female torso skinned from shoulders to waist. Like, he had skinned this out to where he could put it on and wear it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sick.
Leggings made from human leg skin. Masks made from the skin of female heads. They found Mary Hogan's face mask in a paper bag. Mary Hogan was the resident who had actually gone, who was a resident that had actually gone missing about 3 years before, and they never actually knew what had happened to her. They found her there.
Until now, yeah.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And so Mary Huggins' skull was in a box. Bernice Worden's entire head was in a burlap sack. Bernice Worden's heart in a plastic bag in front of Ed's potbelly stove. Nine women's genitalia in a shoebox. Some were painted with ribbons on them. A young
why
girl's.
Ribbons?
I don't know why they were painted.
I was just curious. I didn't know if you had found that out or not.
No idea.
That's
nope.
crazy. That's
no idea.
I mean, I obviously everything else up to this point, but that's right. Just.
But the ribbons is what
strange.
Got you.
Yeah, yeah. The ribbons got me. That was just really strange.
Right. They also found a young girl's dress. And the vulvas of two females judged to have been about 15 years old. A belt made from female human nipples. Four noses in a jar. A pair of lips on a window shade drawstring. A lampshade made from the skin of a human face. And fingernails from female fingers.
Okay, so
yep, go ahead, please.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, you know, the thought process, I guess. You know, how did you go from one end of the spectrum to the complete opposite? I mean, I don't know. I don't know, because that's just really extreme.
Yeah.
And I know that he was digging up graves, right? So he,
oh,
like,
yeah.
some of that stuff was from.
A lot of it was. He was only actually known to have killed two women, and that was Mary Hogan and Bernice Worden.
Right. So.
But he had the remains. Once they got, it took them months to get everything together, because this house was so nasty. And just, I mean, I couldn't even begin to imagine what the inside of this place looked like. But
or
by the time they
smelled
finished.
Like.
But by the time they finished, I think they had 12 complete bodies, if I'm not mistaken. And I do get to a little
Complete?
bit more of it. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I say complete. They had the remains from 12 bodies.
Okay.
Not complete, but I'm sorry, I misspoke. But yeah, from 12
right,
different
okay.
people.
That's insane.
Yeah. And see, it's really odd to me. I'm going to get to some more. So.
Okay.
Okay, it's a lot.
Yeah, the ribbons got me though. Like,
I
let's
know,
just
right?
let's revisit like, that for just a quick second. Like, but why? What made you go from? I mean, not only just having them, but to go to the next point and paint them. Why?
Well,
you know?
Yeah, I do know.
It sounded like. Based on
so
the skulls as the bowls and the lips as the drawstring, you know, and all these random little acts, it just kind of, I mean, he was basically redoing, or I guess decorating in a lighter sense, his house with people's bones and parts. Like, it's just I can't even get the words out. Like, it's just insane to think about.
It is. So these artifacts were actually photographed by the state crime lab laboratory and then, quote, decently disposed of, end quote. Because this was in the 50s, right? So this was such a horrific thing to happen in such a tiny town where everybody knew everybody. They say there weren't a lot of there's not a lot of pictures out there today, and that they didn't really let very many pictures out. The only people that had it were like the crime laboratory and stuff like that, just because it was so gruesome.
And
But
I'd imagine it would cause like a panic to that little community too.
Oh, sure. And
You
once people
know.
found out about it, all the people that
They're
come
gone.
pouring in,
Yeah,
you know
gone.
What I'm saying?
I mean, I wouldn't visit there no more. If I was living there, I wouldn't be living there no more.
Well,
If that
I
was
mean,
happening right up the road from me,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
I'm out.
true, yeah,
I'm gone.
So when they questioned Ed, he told the investigators that between 1947 and 1952, he had made as many as 40 nocturnal visits to three different local graveyards to exhume recently buried bodies while he was in a daze-like state. On about 30 of those visits, he said that he came out of the daze while in the cemetery, left the grave in good order, and returned home empty-handed. On other occasions, he dug up graves of recently buried middle-aged women that he thought resembled his mother and took the bodies home where he tanned their skins to make his paraphernalia. Yeah. So he actually admitted to stealing from 9 graves from local cemeteries and led investigators to the locations, like, because he remembered exactly who they were and where. So there was one person from the state crime laboratory that participated in opening 3 test graves identified by Ed. And the test graves were exhumed because they weren't really sure if this was they weren't really sure that Ed himself could actually go in there, dig these people up or dig this grave up by himself in one night, because they thought at first that he had like an accomplice or whatever. Right. Yeah. But Ed was such a loner that, I mean, do we really know? No. But that was one of the main things, because it was so horrific. They weren't, and he was a small man. He was a small man in stature. He was thin. You know, it's not like they just didn't really believe at first that, because of the way he looked, that it was something that he could do on his own in one night. You know what I'm saying?
It would take a lot, I'd imagine, because even back then, were they still burying the bodies like 6 feet deep in the ground?
Yes. Yeah.
But, so, I mean, that's a lot of just,
right.
That's a lot.
Well, and my main question was, because nowadays, whenever they bury somebody in a concrete vault. And I know this because my daughter's father was a mortician. And I had been out to the, you know, graveyards and stuff like that when they were getting things ready and things like that. But back then, I don't think that was as common of a practice as it is now.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And they said that, well, he actually admitted that what he would do is he would watch the newspapers and things like that. He would read the obituaries. And if it was somebody that he thought that was closely enough resembling his mom, then he would go like the night they buried this person while the ground was still soft.
Soft.
Mm-hmm. So
that's
it wasn't
bizarre.
As hard. Right, right.
That is,
I mean, he
bizarre.
Had this shit thought out. Okay. And I don't believe this daze-like situation bullshit. I call bullshit.
No, he was fascinated by
what the fuck you were doing. I don't believe
right.
That for a second.
It's almost because he didn't do any of that for like sexual pleasure, if I understand right.
No, like he never. Well, they say he never. I mean, he may have masturbated.
Yeah,
but he never actually committed necrophilia.
I was about to say it just sounds. So. I mean, I always associate necrophilia because of the dead body a fascination
right.
or whatever you know. So it's just he was fascinated with dead bodies,
right? With
and
their
that's just
body parts, their skin.
It's just bizarre. That's the best word I've got.
it is
bizarre.
Yep, I agree 100%. So, they actually found the graves as he described. 2 of the exhumed graves were found empty, and one had a crowbar in place of the body. One casket was empty. One casket, Ed had failed to pry open because he had lost his pry bar in the previous one. And most of the body in the 3rd grave was gone. He had actually returned rings and some body parts. So his confession was largely corroborated. I mean, they had to admit that what he had actually said was true. I mean, they looked into it, and what the things that he had told them actually had that they were true, as alarming as that is. So soon after Ed's mother's death, he had actually began to create what was called a woman suit so that he could actually become his mother, to literally crawl inside her skin. And that is a quote.
So let me add something to that.
Absolutely.
Totally out of context for a second.
Sure.
So Doug and I have like this like joke or whatever, because this is going to sound so sappy on a true crime podcast. I'm so sorry.
Hey, hit us with it. We need something.
I know. But like we have this like little thing where like we want to cuddle or whatever, especially if one of us have had a rough day, and we always say like, I want to be inside your skin, but I promise, like, we don't mean that.
Yeah,
but that is just freaky.
Yeah,
that is,
it is
so freaky.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah, freaky is a good word. Ed did deny having sex with the bodies that he exhumed, and he explained, quote, they smelled too bad, end quote.
Interesting. So that's where you draw the line.
This is,
got it.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was like. I was at a loss for a moment going, they smelled too, but you dug up and okay. Moving on.
So did he ever actually wear this nipple belt?
Oh yeah, he wore it all. Crazy. So whenever they got to the whole thing with the actual woman suit, where he had cut the torso and wore the top like a jacket, and then he had put on the like women's leg skin as leggings and things like that. It is said that he actually took one of the vulva, the actual female part, and put it into his pants. And wore it inside of his underwear with his stuff, like, tucked backwards. You know Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs?
Yes.
Just like that.
Yes.
Just like that. And he said that he would wear that on special occasions, and he would frolic in the yard. He would put on a face, a woman's face skin, the jacket or the torso, the leggings, and the thing in his underwear to be able to become a woman. A lot of people have theorized that he may have actually had a problem that we all would understand now, but back in the day, it was not so well understood, that maybe he was like trans, not trans, but maybe he wanted to
cisgender.
Be a woman. Yes. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I just found out about that term a day or so ago.
Say it again.
Cisgender.
I'm
where
not sure
you don't where you don't believe that you are the sex that you were assigned at birth. Like, if you're a male at birth, then you believe that you're supposed to be a woman. You're not necessarily trans, but that's just kind of your feelings behind it. You feel like you're made to be something that you are currently not.
Right.
But I don't know if I would. I mean, of course, I don't know. I mean, we will never know, because he's gone now, right? He's passed away.
Yeah, he died in 1984.
Unfortunately, we won't have a chance to really examine where his thinking or his mind was actually at in that moment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think it might have just been a way to, because of how close he was with his mother,
I think,
and
so
how
too.
How their relationship was formed and everything, is it just kind of seems like, since she was no longer physically there, the only thing he had was to try to recreate her.
Right.
And it's in some sick, twisted terminology that he did these horrible, bizarre acts to create what he did. I mean,
right.
I don't necessarily think that he was trying to be anything, but of course, I don't know that for sure. This is just my opinion.
Sure.
But that's still
very
odd.
Right. And I mean, and anything that someone says, unless they were actually there, and even then, you can't know what's inside someone else's mind.
Right.
But I mean, and these are all just pretty much theories, as far as, I mean, unless it was direct quotes from him, and he did, it is said in a book based on him and his life, that is some of the things that he said about that. But as far as him being, what did you call it?
Cisgender. It's like CIS gender.
Right. And as far as him being like that, or feeling like he would have been more comfortable as a woman, something like that. I mean, we don't know. I mean, it's all just theories or whatever. Major,
right.
Stop snoring. My dog is snoring.
But nonetheless, so, it's odd either way.
It is very odd.
To go to that extremity.
Mm-hmm. And what I was going to say one more thing, and I'm glad you said that. With him only having like access to his mother and no other women his entire life, right?
Yeah.
As far as we know, he never had sexual intercourse. He may have masturbated, but as far as being with a woman, He never was. He never admitted to necrophilia, anything like that. So maybe that also was part of his confusion. You know what I mean? Sure. I mean, how often do you find a male who has never had some kind of sexual encounter with a female? You know what I mean?
Well, going back to, you know, the comment that I made earlier and about him whenever he was 8 years old, and, you know, it was basically like his mother kind of confined him and kept him away from not even just people in general, but from men, women, anything that could be some form of
outside influence or whatever.
Some kind of influence on him, because, and I mean, if he was masturbating at 12 and, you know, she grabs it. I mean, you know, that's just, that would confuse, I think, anybody.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know how the religion is. I'm actually going to look a little bit into it because I'm kind of curious to know. But I think that would just confuse anybody at that age in life when they're curious. They want to, you know, figure out how things work, what they don't do, what they do, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
So I just think that there's a lot of confusion.
I mean,
in his younger years.
Yeah. And obviously at 12 years old, I mean, he's hitting puberty. He's, you know, wondering about
curious
things. And she is here Bible beating him. And I'm not disrespecting anybody who's, you know, religious or anything like that. But she was using it more or less as a weapon against these boys to keep them away from people. You know what I mean? And preaching
being social with even having friends, much less a woman friend. So and I mean, after she had passed, I mean, it's like I said earlier, it seems like their relationship was a little bit more romantic.
Yeah.
And it may not have been a romantic like how a boyfriend girlfriend or a husband and wife romantic is, but you know, like a more intimate relationship that has crossed a line that a mother and son should not.
Right.
You know?
And with her being the only female in his life, he didn't know any different.
That was
think.
The trigger, you know, after what I mean? She had passed. And I think he was looking for an outlet, and maybe that was his only way out. And to somehow in some way recreate her, because he felt lost.
Right.
I don't know. Trying to make sense of something like this is
hard
to do.
There was actually one of the people who had done an article on him that said that when his mom passed away, that Ed had lost his one true love.
Yeah.
Because that was all he had ever known. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
that
kind of
makes sense.
Yeah, that kind of factors into it as well. so during state crime laboratory interrogation, that was a whole lot of words all there together, and I could not separate them and try to say them. Ed also admitted to shooting 51-year-old Mary Hogan. She was actually a tavern owner who had been missing since December the 8th of 1954. That's the one I was speaking about earlier. Her head was actually found in his house, but he later denied memories of the details of her death. Sure you did.
Well, so I've got quite a few books, especially those that depict the mind of how a serial killer, or I don't think you can call him a serial killer, but he was very ill in the mind, about how they are, how they work.
Right.
And I mean, I'm not saying that they all do, but typically most of them remember everything about every crime they've committed.
Yeah, because they want to relive
every detail.
It. Yeah.
Yes.
They want to relive it.
So I don't believe that he doesn't remember or didn't remember.
Right. I mean, it's just really hard for me to believe. Now, mind you, I haven't studied forensics or psychology or anything like that like you have. But my main experience is podcasts and documentaries and books and stuff like that.
And, which relay the same message-ish.
Right. But would a mental illness make you do some things and you not be able to remember it? That's my question. I mean, was he mentally ill? There's no question about that. Of course he was. Most serial killers, and they did classify him as a serial killer then, although it wasn't the quote unquote serial killer phrase, because that wasn't even made until like the late 70s or whatever. But that is what a lot of people call him. However, he only And I say only, and I don't mean to diminish the murders that he did, but he only committed two murders, where normally it takes more than that to actually be classified that way. But he was such a monster, or considered to be such a monster of the time. But my question is, like I said, will mental incapacity make you forget? I'm curious.
See, I don't believe so. I believe it might be a certain diagnosis, perhaps.
Sure. Okay.
That would cause one to forget something, but the only reason that you do anything as such is to relive it. That's how their minds are programmed, you know. And once you experience it or experiment with whatever the crime or case may be, then you get like an adrenaline rush. And even though it wasn't sexual for him, it's somewhat like a release for him, you know? So I don't believe that he forgot.
Right. Because
or maybe
these...
it was just a way to just not get in trouble. I don't know.
Right. And I mean, because both of the women that he did actually murder, they had bore a strong resemblance to his mom, and that was why, you know what I mean?
Right. That was, I mean, you said he like looked at the obituaries just to simply saw out people that looked like his mom or resembled his mom in some way. So that's.
So I find it really hard to believe that that would be the case. Him not remembering.
Yeah, so. I agree.
So, A 16-year-old youth whose parents were actually friends of Ed and who had attended ball games and movies with him reported that Ed kept shrunken heads in his house, which Ed had described as relics from the Philippines sent by a cousin who had served in the islands during World War II. Upon investigation by the police, and this was only after all this had went down, when these kids first went home and said, "Hey, Mom, Ed's got like heads in his house, this and that," they just kind of poo-pooed it, right? Because believe it or not, I know a lot of people are not gonna know this. You actually used to be able to get like fake shrunken heads back in the day from places like the Philippines, stuff like that. It was just like a novelty item, and that's where those parents went with it. They were like, "Y'all are just making a mountain out of a molehill. It's not really shrunken heads." You know, they knew Ed. They had been in contact with him. He had been to their houses. He'd watched their kids. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So when the investigation was going on, these were actually determined to be human facial skins carefully peeled from the corpses and used by Ed as masks.
Wow.
Like, he had them hanging on the wall next to his bed. Yeah. Ugh.
Creepy.
Right.
Creepy, creepy, creepy.
So, in addition to the murders of Hogan and Warden, Ed was also considered a suspect in several other unsolved cases in Wisconsin. On November of 1957, authorities confronted Ed with a list of missing persons cases that had occurred between the death of his mother and the death of Bernice Warden. Their suspicions were further aroused after the discovery of remains of Mary Hogan, who was actually in his house. So they did a lie detector test on him, and it exonerated him of any of the other murders, and his psychiatrist concluded that his violence was only directed to the women who physically resembled his mother. Now, there is a list of these other murders that had happened, but because they were not eventually related to the Ed Gein case, I'm not going to list those at this time, because I just don't feel like, with that being said, that he really had anything to do with it. They didn't find any remains of any of these people. I think because they were just so freaked out by everything they found at his house, they were trying to pretty much attribute all of this to him. So we're not going to list those people at this time. We do, you know, our hearts go out to their families, but I'm just not going to get into that. So on November the 21st of 1957, Ed was arraigned on one count of first degree murder where he pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia and found mentally incompetent, thus unfit for trial. He was sent to Central State Hospital for the criminally insane, a maximum security facility in Wisconsin, and was later transferred to Mendota State Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. In 1968, doctors determined that Ed was mentally able to confer with counsel and participate in his defense. So, the trial finally begins on November the 7th of 1968 and lasted 1 week. A psychiatrist testified that Ed had told him that he did not know whether the killing of Bernice Worden was intentional or accidental. He said, Ed said, that while he had examined a gun in Bernice's store, the gun had went off, accidentally killing her. Ed testified that after trying to load a bullet into the rifle, it had discharged. He said that he had not aimed the rifle at Bernice and did not remember anything else that happened that morning. There's another one where he says he don't remember.
Yeah, which, I mean, I guess it's possible with his schizophrenia that he kind of maybe had like a one-track mind sort of thing.
Is that like a manic state kind of thing?
Depends on the level of schizophrenia. So I'm, you know, aware of, I guess, because some levels, you know, you could, I mean, it's just so many different ways. And especially back then, it may have been some branch that hadn't been heard of yet. It may not necessarily have been schizophrenia. He could have had BPD for all we know, and zoned out when the whole thing was happening and really didn't have any recollection of it. Yeah. But then again, you had these items, these body parts all over your entire house. So how
hard
could
to
you
deny that?
You know, there's just so many things that just contradict with the everything. It's
right.
I would have loved to have picked his brain, to be honest, though. Just talk to him.
Just talk to him.
Yeah. Just because I mean, somebody like him, you obviously probably were never able to ask him a direct question and get a direct answer. You would have to kind of play around it, you know, but I would have loved to just sit down and just try to figure out the thought process behind it all.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
I'm sure he, if you got him to like cognitive behavioral interviews,
how they make you
basically relive the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if that was a thing way back then, but that probably would have been the best way to go about him.
That would have been very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So at the request of the defense, Ed's trial was held without a jury and Judge Robert H. Gallmer presiding. Ed was found guilty by the judge on November the 14th. A second trial dealt with Gene's sanity. After testimony by doctors for the prosecution and defense, Gallmer ruled that Gene was not guilty by reason of insanity and ordered him committed to Central State Hospital for the criminally insane. Ed spent the rest of his life in a mental hospital. Judge Gallmer wrote, quote, due to prohibitive costs, Gein was tried for only one murder, that of Miss Worden. He also admitted to killing Mary Hogan, end quote. So they just didn't want to spend the money to do another trial. He'd already been found guilty. But by reason guilt not guilty by reason of insanity, excuse me, but he admitted to both of them, so there was no point in going through that again. He had admitted it. So
yeah,
as far as Ed Gein's property, so his house and 195 acres worth of property were appraised at $4,700, which is the equivalent of $48,000 in today. His possessions were scheduled to be auctioned on March the 30th of 1958 amidst rumors that the house and the land where it stood might become a tourist attraction. Early on the morning of March 20th, which was 10 days before the auction was supposed to be held, his house was destroyed by fire.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. How convenient.
Mm. A deputy fire marshal reported that a garbage fire had been set about 75 feet from the house by a cleaning crew who was given the task of disposing of the refuse, and that hot coals were recovered from the spot of the bonfire, but that the fire did not spread along the ground from that location to the house. Basically saying that ain't what caused the fire.
Yeah.
So arson was suspected, shocker, but the cause of the fire was never officially determined. It is possible that the fire was not considered a matter of urgency by the fire chief, who was then Frank Warden, the son of Bernice Warden, the last lady that was killed at the hardware store. Yeah.
Right.
So when, So when Ed learned of the incident while in detention, he shrugged and said, quote, just as well, end quote. Yeah. So the only thing that actually did get auctioned off was Gein's 1949 Ford sedan. He had actually used that vehicle to haul the bodies of the victims from the graveyards. I mean, that was his car, his truck.
Yeah.
And it was sold at public auction for $760 then, which is an equivalent of $7,700 now. And it was made into a carnival sideshow by a woman who purchased it named Bunny Gibbons. She charged carnival goers 25 cents to be able to see it. So she just traveled from carnival to carnival to carnival for years, and just getting 25 cents every time somebody wanted to come see Ed Gein's truck. Ain't that crazy?
That is.
That's about like the Bonnie and Clyde car.
Yeah, which I'll, in our chat, I'll talk about something related to that.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. All right, so the last thing I have is the death of Ed Gein. Ed Gein died at the Mendota Mental Hospital, Mental Health Institute, excuse me, and due to respiratory failure, secondary. Lord have mercy. I'm having a problem swallowing, y'all. Give me a second. Something's in my throat.
It happens to the best of us. Okay.
All right, so let me start over. Ed Gein died at Mendota Mental Health Institute due to respiratory failure secondary to lung cancer on July the 26th of 1984 at the age of 77. Over the years, souvenir seekers chipped pieces from his gravestone at the Plainfield Cemetery, which was right next to his mother's, until the stone itself was stolen in 2000. It was recovered in June of 2001 near Seattle, Washington, and was placed in storage at the County Sheriff's Department in Plainsville, where he was from. The gravesite itself is now unmarked, but not unknown, and Ed Gein is interred between his parents and brother in the cemetery. And that, my people, is the story of Ed Gein.
Well, it gives Leatherface a whole nother perspective, don't it?
Gives them horror movies a whole new meaning, don't it, honey?
Listen, well, you know, like I'd only heard about Ed Gein just, you know, because I've seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, sure, like all of them,
mm-hmm,
100 times, you know, or right, Silence of the Lambs, Psycho, you know, all of those things. And like, I guess there was just so many things I thought was just
made
dramatized
up,
mm-hmm, or exaggerated. But yeah, that's just, I mean, a very bizarre case. I mean,
yep,
it's just,
it was one of the most interesting and disturbing cases.
Yeah,
when I started disturbing. Listening to podcasts and looking through documentaries and things like that, I was just sitting there with my mouth open going, what the actual fuck?
Yeah.
You know, I mean?
That's just, I had only read just a little bit before we had, you know, got on, just to kind of, I guess, see or whatever, have some of my own talking points. But I was just like,
sure,
this is insane.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a lot.
And I mean, who's to say how long he would have kept going had he not got caught what he did too. I mean,
right,
there could have been a lot more lives taken, mm-hmm, or a lot more graves dug up.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Right. So with that being said, you guys, for those of y'all that have been with us during this case, thank you for being here. Please go like, subscribe, join us on our Facebook group page. And now we are going to move on to our chatter banter section. So if you guys are leaving at this point, we love y'all. And please join us next week. So with that being said, Shell, how was your week?
Good. Not a lot. It's been a short week. I was off Monday, Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
So not a lot going on, basically.
Yeah.
I've been able to catch up on some reading. I'm still reading that that Colleen Hoover book I was telling you about, but I'm not even halfway through with it yet. But it's interesting. It's okay so far.
Yeah, my friend Alyssa is supposed to be supposed to have been bringing me the book, The End of Us. Is that the right name?
It Ends With Us.
It Ends With Us. That's it. She's been supposed to bring me that book all week, and I still don't have it. But
I I saw a thing earlier on Facebook, earlier like a few months ago or so, where they're supposedly making a movie. I have not read that book yet.
Ooh, okay.
But they're supposed to be making a movie, and it has like Blake Lively
Oh, okay.
in it. But then I saw recently, within like maybe the last month or so, I could be wrong, but then they stopped recording or something. So I don't know if that's even still a thing or not. But I think it would be really cool to have one of her books, you know, turn into a movie, even though I'm kind of biased when it comes to that, because I prefer the book over the movie usually.
Yeah,
But
the books are always better.
Always, always. But since it's Thursday, you know, whenever I get off here, me and Doug are going to watch the NFL game. So,
okay. Yeah,
yeah.
It's Thursday for us. It'll be Sunday for you guys whenever y'all finally hear this. But so what game are y'all watching?
The Chiefs and Lions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are y'all
I
recording
mean,
it?
No. We'll watch it. I think he said off Amazon Prime or something.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know, but
yeah.
Football's back on, so I was excited for football. I'm more excited for hockey. Whatever.
I don't care anything about hockey, and the only football I care about is if it's the Georgia Bulldogs and sometimes the Falcons. It depends on how the Falcons are playing.
Yeah, see, he's a Falcons fan through and through, and
Well, I love the Falcons. I love our teams, the Georgia
yeah.
teams. But the Falcons have really let me down the past couple of years, and the Bulldogs have been nothing but fire, baby. But let me
Right.
tell you that the very first game was not aired. Did you hear about that bullshit?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, we couldn't get the very first game of the Bulldogs.
I didn't
It
know
was
that it
held
wasn't
here.
aired.
Yeah, it was held here in Hawkinsville, in Georgia. But it wasn't. It was like some no-name team. So they didn't even air it. You had to like subscribe to ESPN Plus or some shit like that just to be able to see it. And the people that did subscribe to that just to be able to get the game, it was glitching really bad.
Oh no.
So it would like blue screen and have the thinking
Well, I
circle
saw some
and
people
all this kind of
post
shit.
on Facebook where they were like, where can we watch the game at and everything? And I saw some people saying like you can watch it on YouTube or obviously ESPN Plus, which I have ESPN Plus because that's how I watch my hockey games. But even on the app, if you were to go to players like press play, or at least for me, I tried to pull it up a couple different times, and it wouldn't pull up the actual game. It was just like basically like the rundown of what was going on. It wasn't a video. It was kind of crazy, but I didn't know that it wasn't like actually aired. That's crazy.
Yeah, my husband is a diehard football fan, and I did not know if we were gonna have a TV after that.
Well,
yeah,
yeah.
he was so hot. Oh, he was so hot. Because the main reason we have YouTube TV is so that he's able to watch sports, because I never watched nothing on YouTube TV. I think Yellowstone was on there, and that was the only other thing that we would record off of YouTube TV. But those two things, and this is going to be the last season of Yellowstone, so it's going to be absolutely useless to me. And when he found out that YouTube TV was not going to be airing that football game, he was
Lost it.
livid, girl.
Oh no.
He was like, I'm pissing a fine time. Yeah, he was mad. He was real mad.
Oh no. I
but
hate that.
Yeah, but
so going back to
yeah, you were gonna say
earlier.
something.
Yeah, so I was actually gonna say something, but I figured I'd save it for tonight.
Okay.
But I know that there was a post in our group page on Facebook about the museum,
the medieval torture museum, the medieval torture device museum.
Yes. So I have stumbled upon a dark hole again on TikTok, as I do every week, it seems.
Bring it
and
on.
I have yeah and I have found that the Alcatraz Museum has the Ted Bundy's car. It has Jeffrey Dahmer's glasses and handcuffs. John Wayne Gacy's clown costumes. I mean, just all things true crime.
This is in California, though, right?
Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
What?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my. Okay.
So I was reading up on it, and some people were like saying, you know, like it was very interesting and very informative and I saw one girl, she commented because I guess, you know, like all of us, apparently that according to Facebook, anyways, we have red flags if we enjoy true crime. But
of course, red flag me. I don't care.
she said that it took her a good two. She probably could have spent another hour. So you spend probably about 3 hours in there. Just
wow.
All kinds of different things. I don't know what else all they have. I've just seen little videos. Of course, they're going to show you the mainstream, infamous.
The most popularly known, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, but to see Ted Bundy's car, or Jeffrey Dahmer's glasses,
right.
I'd be very intrigued to see all of this.
Me?
But I did not know. I thought it was in California myself, but I actually Googled it, and it's at Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
Well, I know Alcatraz itself is, and they do give tours, yes. Or did. I'm not sure if they still do, but I know that they did for a long time give tours there.
Yeah.
So when you say Alcatraz, that's automatically where my mind goes.
Where, right.
Ever. Same. I did not know that there was an Alcatraz museum in Pigeon Forge.
Yeah.
Because that is within reach of me.
Yeah.
Of us, mm-hmm. girls mm-hmm. trip kind yeah. of thing.
No, know that's what I was saying. Yeah.
Oh my God. So,
and when I did a little bit of digging on Ed Gein, I kind of forgot about this because I've watched Dahmer, the Netflix series, when it came out last year.
Sure.
And when it came out and everything, I kind of forgot that they hinted at Ed Gein being one of his influences to his crimes.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of, you know, I mean, because all of them just kind of run together in the brain.
Yeah.
So you on, just buddy. Study so much of all of them and everything. But yeah, I just found that really interesting. Very
interesting. Super interesting. Yeah. How far is Pigeon Forge from us? Do you know? Because I know exactly how far St. Augustine is, and it is 4 hours and 11 minutes because I looked it up. but like my friend, Trevecca, shout out Trevecca Doggett. She said that they actually went last summer and that there are several different things that you're able to do down there in St. Augustine. It's like a very old place and they have a lot of history there, and you can do an actual tour of an old jail. You can do a ghost trolley tour. They will take you on a tour of the city and tell you how many bodies are buried under the streets.
Ooh.
Along with the medieval torture device museum. I mean, I'm like, sign me the fuck up.
Yeah, no, that sounds really interesting. Very yeah. interesting.
So
that I just typed in that actual museum, and mm-hmm. from me, it's 6 hours and 28 minutes.
Okay, that's not undoable. That's a day trip. I mean, it's yeah. a day trip to get there. We'd have to find somewhere to stay overnight because I ain't driving back.
Say, it would definitely have to be a weekend thing, but I found it to be very, very interesting. And they're open till 9 p.m., which is also very strange for a museum. So I'd look a little bit more into that because
yeah.
they might have something else.
Like some on. Kind of nighttime tour or some shit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because for a museum anyways, for it to mm-hmm. be open till 9, it's just a little... Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Most museums are going to be about 4, 5, 6-ish, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah,
but yeah. I
but with
to
it having the with it having the content and stuff like that, maybe they did it because of that. You know what I mean?
There
to get that little spook
so,
factor or whatever.
Yeah, there might just be so much
mm-hmm.
there too mm-hmm. that you know, try to allot some time for people if they come later in the day or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a huge tourist attraction. I'm sure.
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you're able to, I don't know if you know this or not, if you're able to like pay a certain price and then walk through on your own, or if they like do tours or how
tours?
That works.
I don't know.
Oh, it's tours?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I was finishing your sentence. I don't know, honestly. I will do some more digging though.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, anything that's within reach of us, I would love to do.
Yeah,
I'd love
for
to.
Sure.
And it would have to be you and me, or maybe you and me and Doug. I don't know how interested he is in the whole situation, but Mickey, he don't give a fuck about none of that stuff. He's like, mm-mm, I don't want none of it. Mm-mm. He's not into none of it. He's not into
no.
that. He supports me 100%. Yeah. He's behind me with anything and everything that I want to do. But as far as him going and walking through the medieval torture device museum, he's going to be, I'm out. That's the whole
yeah.
thing. I'm out. I'll be at the hotel.
Yeah,
I'll be at the beach. I'll be at the bar.
It.
But yeah. He's not.
I would love to see stuff like that and
crap.
Just kind of
me too.
Do the own like face to face, like be there in person with all of these. Oh gosh, it would just be.
I just want to experience it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just want to experience it. That's all. But yeah, so yeah, super, super interesting situations. We need to find out if there's any more, and we need to make us a whole like tour circuit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm down for that.
But okay. So this week we had a post on our Facebook group.
Yes.
Shelby made the post, and we had several different people who commented on it, and we just wanted to bring it up and like,
all my friends.
Yeah, they're all Shelby's friends, and we would just want to give them a shout out and let them know that we see you, we heard you, and we're going to make a list of the things that you have suggested. So, Shel?
Yeah. So a young lady I actually go to church with, and I am so sorry if I pronounce your name wrong, but Jessalyn, my buddy Chuck and Rachel, they've got a few good cases. I've actually already started on one that Chuck had recommended because it was very interesting. I don't want to give any spoilers because it'll be in the next couple of weeks to come.
Okay.
I'd actually been looking at this case for a little while now, and I know that you will hate it because it's one of those
it's
mysterious.
Unsolved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's technically solved, but there's just so much information surrounding it that would, it's just very mysterious.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
So, but yeah, no, I'm definitely intrigued.
Okay.
So,
Jessalyn, Chuck, and
Rachel.
Rachel, thank y'all so much for reaching out to us. We will definitely put those suggestions on our list. So thank you for participating. And
we encourage everyone else to participate.
Please, please send us a case that you're interested in. Send us something that you've experienced. Send us anything. Y'all DM us, come on our group, let us know. We have an email, murdersandmonsters1311 @gmail.com. Yeah, y'all just let us know. We're making lists and we're checking them twice, people. We would love to have y'all in our groups with us. So let us know. You got anything else, Shelley? Shelby?
I think that's good.
I think I just called you Shelly and I did not mean to.
It's okay.
I was going Shell and Shelby and it just came out that way.
I knew what you meant.
Okay, well guys, I think we're gonna wrap it up for this week. Please like, review, subscribe, join us on our Facebook group. We love y'all and thank you for continuing to support us. I don't know if y'all have seen, but we have had over 1,000 downloads so far. What we're shooting for is 1,000 downloads in 30 days. So if you guys could help us keep climbing, we're doing really good. It's taking us a little time and that's fine. We're in it for the long haul, but we just want to say thanks and we love y'all. So
love y'all.
Monsters do exist.
Don't be a victim.
Bye guys.